It is early in the morning, and your phone is ringing.
Hello?
Health alert. An individual you came in contact with at Mike's Pancake Parlor, Gresham location on Saturday, April 3rd, has tested positive for coronavirus. Please monitor your symptoms as directed and report any elevated levels to your health care provider. Thank you. Stay safe. It is Friday, April 9th, 2021. Is this the dystopian near future of contact tracing?
Thinking back to late 2019, just as word of a new pneumonia-like virus started creeping out of China, not many people would have been able to tell you what social distancing meant. 6 months later, those two words are now so commonplace in our daily discussions, it is tough to imagine a world without them. Now, two new words have arrived in our lexicon: contact tracing. And much like most of us couldn't define social distancing back in December, our general understanding of contact tracing is limited at best. Contact tracing has been used to control the spread of diseases since the mid-1800s, when we first learned they were infectious. The difference now, during the current coronavirus pandemic, is that tech is being used to make it much more effective. But that comes along with legitimate concerns. As we set out to explain the application of contact tracing, you're going to hear from several people over the course of this podcast.
Tricia Mortel, Washington County Public Health Manager.
Greg Astley, I'm the Director of Government Affairs from the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association.
Mike Steer, and I'm co-founder at Safe4Me.
Longtime U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley weighs in.
It's a scary, futuristic society where everyone is monitored every moment, either by private business or by the government.
So does a doctor from Johns Hopkins.
I think this is the best chance we have to getting back to something that would resemble the life we had before.
You'll hear quite a bit from Chenri Chi, an expert in the field of public health.
And I'm a professor of two graduate programs at Oregon State University. One is in global health program, the other is health management policy. And I'm also serving as a director of Oregon State University's Center for Global Health.
And ultimately, we'll take a look at whether or not contact tracing is necessary as we try to navigate toward a new normal. It is Wednesday, June 10th, and you are listening to the COIN Podcast Network coverage of the coronavirus pandemic.
From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a COIN 6 digital exclusive.
Like a lot of people, up until a few months or so ago, I hadn't heard much about the idea of contact tracing. It seems simple. Find out who someone has been in contact with. Outside of fighting disease, the basics of contact tracing are applied in different ways to things like criminal investigations, background checking prospective employees, and even player trades in professional sports.
So we talk to someone, determine who they've been with, how long have they been with, what have they done when they're with them, ask questions and ask sometimes some pretty invasive questions. Mm-hmm. Who have you been with? How long have you been with them? What have you done with them?
That's Tricia Mortel. She's the public health manager for Washington County. She's also one of the first people I talked to about the application of contact tracing in public health. To get our conversation started, I asked her to break it down as simply as possible.
Can you explain what contact tracing is?
Sure. I know that people are very confused about this terminology, contact tracing, but it really is public health practice that we do all the time. Public health is always at the forefront of disease investigation and disease control. When someone becomes ill with a disease, we determine, is this an infectious disease and could other people get it? So we start with the case and we interview the case and we ask them, who have you been around? How long have you been around them? What did you do when you were with them? So that we could determine if someone else could be contracting a disease. That next level is what we call contact tracing. These are the contacts of someone we know who's already ill. So we want to do notification, and maybe that's a better word for the public.
If I understand it, this isn't new. This has been going on basically since we discovered diseases were contagious. Isn't this basically the same as when a public health department notifies people that they may have been exposed to something like the measles at a shopping mall.
Correct. This is very similar to what we do all the time when we notify the public. With measles, we notify people of a place because it's so volatile and people can be exposed at a shopping mall, as you mentioned. With other diseases, we go back to those close contacts. So maybe another better example is tuberculosis. People can be exposed to tuberculosis from family, friends, or coworkers, but it takes a longer time to really be exposed and become ill. We want to check in daily and say, how are you feeling? Have you got any of the symptoms? You know, what are you doing to make sure that you're not around other people?
Another expert that I heard from while putting this podcast together is Dr. Emily Gurley from the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. She stopped by Coin News AM Extra and explained the basics of contact tracing as it applies to the coronavirus this way.
Once someone is diagnosed with COVID-19, they're contacted and someone helps them assess their symptoms, make sure they can get medical care. Then they help them understand how they could be infectious to other people and to come up with a plan to limit their contact with other people so that they don't spread it to anyone else. Then they ask them, they go through a series of questions like, where were you yesterday? Where did you go? You know, how did you get there? To try to identify people who may have been exposed to them while they were infectious. And this is key because we want to find people who've been exposed and could be infectious themselves. And then we want to contact them and make sure they know that they could become infectious and could unknowingly infect someone they love. It's something that's done every day at health departments all across our country to stop the spread of other transmissible diseases like HIV or tuberculosis.
Now, with a better understanding of what contact tracing is, I asked Tricia Mortel to explain how it works and how it is used to slow the spread of any disease.
We want to notify someone that they've had an exposure. They may become ill. And what should they do to make sure that they isolate themselves and quarantine themselves? We start with the ill person. So we start with a case and we call that someone, you know, who's positive for COVID. And then we move to talking to those people they've been in contact with and ask them to watch for those symptoms. Stay home. Don't go out in the public. Make sure that you are staying home for a certain period of time, around 14 days, to make sure that you don't become ill.
Staying home, that kind of self-imposed isolation, leaves it up to the infected person to decrease the chances of transmitting the disease and getting other people sick, something Mortel feels most people are willing to do without being forced to.
Does Washington County have the authority to force quarantine?
Isolation and quarantine are voluntary here in Oregon and across the United States. We have, for the most part, a good compliance because we're talking to people daily. We're helping them to achieve this. And many people, although they have, you know, important needs to go to work, they know that they could potentially make someone else sick. And I think that's what's really worked for us in this period of time where we've all been essentially in a little bit of isolation and quarantine. I don't think any of us want to become ill and pass it on to our grandma or someone else who has an underlying medical condition, because those are the people who will become seriously ill and die. So we are all doing our best. And I think Oregonians are very good at trying to do their best during this pandemic.
What kind of buy-in do you need from the public to make contact tracing really effective?
Very good question. What buy-in do we need for the community around contact tracing? Is we need people to comply with voluntary isolation and quarantine. I kind of get, I guess, surprised about a lot of focus right now on the term contact tracers or contact tracing. That's not what's going to help us stop the spread of this disease. People staying home is what's going to help us stop the spread of this disease. And previously, Oregonians did really a good job of staying home to flatten the curve. Now we're asking some individuals and some families to stay home if they are ill and if they've been exposed. So it's a bigger burden on a few or a number of people going into this next phase. But as I've mentioned before, most people, once they understand that they could put others at risk, want to do the right thing.
Dr. Gurley agreed, saying that isolating people who have tested positive is key to slowing the spread of any disease.
So we want to help them come up with a plan to limit their contact with other people while they could be infectious. And by doing that, then we can stop the chains of transmission.
During her appearance on Coin News AM Extra, she went on from there to explain the role of the actual contact tracer.
The role of a contact tracer has many parts. It's part detective, it's part social worker, it's part therapist. It's all about people reaching out to help other people to make sure they know how to stop transmission. I think really it's a difficult job, but it's about connecting with people, you know, to give and get the right information to people, take some skills and building rapport and talking to people.
Dr. Gurley's description of a contact tracer is very similar to the way Mortel talks about the people she is looking for to help with the boots on the ground contact tracing effort in Washington County.
So let's talk about Washington County and what you're doing. What does it mean to be a contact tracer?
So a contact tracer is simply a person who has good personal skills. They also are a little bit of a social worker. What do you need right now? If you need testing, do you have a place to get it? Can I help you get that? If you're needing food delivered, do you have the ability to do that? Or can I help you get that? So a little bit of a customer service and social worker, I would say. People that are compassionate, people that are good at eliciting information from others, and then providing that good resource and support network to the people that they're going to talk to daily, because that is something they will be doing, is checking in daily with people. So they do develop a kind of a personal relationship to help people get through this period. It's kind of scary if you think about it, just sitting home waiting to decide, am I going to become ill? It's not a very comfortable place for any of us to be at.
So will these contact tracers be physically going out into neighborhoods? I live in Washington County. Can I expect one of these people to be knocking on my door?
Contact tracers do not go into the field. It's a phone interview. We're talking to people on the phone. And so, no, we won't have investigators out in neighborhoods or communities looking for those who might become ill.
So the idea is to identify as many people as you can who may have been exposed, and then get them to really pay attention to their symptoms. And then if those symptoms are seen, you're asking them to quarantine.
If someone becomes symptomatic, we'll actually get them tested. So we'll help make sure they can get tested, because that will really tell us, are their symptoms COVID or not? If they do become ill, then we really need to have them isolate away from others, because that's critical in a household. You really want someone who's ill not to even pass it on to those that they live with.
Tricia, how challenging of an effort is this?
The work that we're doing has been challenging from day one. It's very emotional. It's very intensive. I think it's going to continue to be emotionally challenging for those that we work with and the families that are in isolation and quarantine. So we're doing everything we can to have the right social services, emotional health, and physical health supports for people if they are faced with this.
Putting together who might be sick and asking them to stay in their house has been proven to slow the spread of coronavirus. But building systems to make sure people are as safe as possible outside of the home is a bigger and more complicated piece of the contact tracing puzzle.
Your company is finding a niche, reducing risk for other companies.
That's right. And I mean, if you look at the current COVID outbreak, you know, many of the countries that are doing well, quote unquote, at the moment have been the ones that have been both testing really well and broadly, and also contact tracing.
If there is a success story to be found in all the sadness that comes along with the coronavirus, it can be found to our east.
You might have heard or read about Taiwan's tremendous success in terms of containing this pandemic.
I had a long conversation with Oregon State University professor Chen-Wei Chi. While teaching graduate-level courses in global health and healthcare policy, he has also spent a significant amount of time with his eyes on the island nation just off the coast of China.
I have been paying a lot of attention since last December, at the very early beginning of this pandemic, and then paying extra attention starting January.
The first confirmed coronavirus case in Taiwan came on January 21st, 2020. They didn't pass 20 cases until mid-February. As of the 1st of June, they have less than 500. 23.5 million people live on a 14,000 square mile island. To put that population density in perspective, that's roughly 5 times the population of Oregon in just 15% of the space. Extremely low numbers of cases in a densely populated area, despite the fact that a vast majority of businesses, government offices, and schools in Taiwan stayed open.
Taiwan is one of the few countries, probably the only country, did that extremely tight monitor control while keeping everything open.
Within weeks of its first case, Taiwan began checking millions of residents for symptoms, quarantining the sick, and tracking down everyone who may have been exposed.
This system was established at the end of January, when Taiwan just a handful of few cases. That allowed Taiwan to do a very detailed contact tracing.
Over the next several minutes of our discussion, Chi went on to explain how Taiwan used technology to trace potential COVID-19 transmitters, enforce quarantines, and reduce the likelihood of additional outbreaks.
Taiwan used a lot of measures combining its strong health care infrastructure to do a very meticulous contact tracing. And one of them is a very high-tech using cell phone signal. The person under quarantine are required to download an app. It's not voluntary. And with that app, the government can collaborate with the 5 major cell phone carriers. So it's based on the cell phone signals. So they call it the electronic digital fence system. And using that to monitor the people who are under quarantine. And not only that, but when a person under quarantine actually violated the quarantine, when they went to certain public places, the cell phone signal will identify those places and immediately announce those places to the public and ask the public to monitor their health.
Dr. Chi said making downloading the app mandatory for those in quarantine allowed the government to set up a digital fence to contain the coronavirus. And thanks to a deal with the 5 major cell carriers in the country, cell phone signals are being used in another way to try and slow the spread of the disease.
For the public, they have another purpose. Because everything remains open, people still go to work, all schools are open, and so there's holidays. And holiday, people like to go to resort public places, so they use that cell phone signal to monitor how many people are in one particular spot. And then they will send out warning. If that particular spot is started to be crowded, they send out warning. They have 3 levels of warning. The lowest level is suggested try to avoid, and the middle level is should avoid, and the highest level is they call red alert. Is you're forbidden to go to that places because it's overcrowded. So they send text message to anyone who is approaching that places.
As just a way of basically enforcing social distancing.
Yes, yes.
The ideas of digital fencing and digitally enforced social distancing helped contain the coronavirus in Taiwan and allowed the majority of the country to remain open during the pandemic. But keeping businesses open in Taiwan and reopening them in places like Europe and the United States will likely require another level of contact tracing, technology beyond simple cell phone tracking.
The leaders of businesses have to make sure that their employees are safe, so they need to be taking those measures to actually make sure that they're helping protect their own workers.
Mike Steer is in the business of keeping businesses operational through any number of risky scenarios. From his corporate office in Christchurch, New Zealand, he explained to me how his company, called Safer Me, came into being.
Founded in 2012 and have been used mostly for helping companies to identify physical hazards and hazardous areas and help keep workers safe from those areas. So proactively alert them to hazards and risks they may face and then provide analytics around people that have been exposed to that risk.
Risk means more than just disease.
That's right. Yeah. So in many cases, we're talking about physical hazards. So that's why our focus is on the business and providing, I guess, tools for the business that help them manage the risk for them, help them provide the safety, you know, have the duty of care to their employees to keep them safe.
Before the onset of the coronavirus, Safer Me was using data to keep workers safe from things like severe weather.
We have the international data set of real-time lightning strikes. So we can actually provide a lightning strike alert to people within a certain radius of that strike to provide stop work notifications. So workers in utilities and those types of industries where they might be exposed to these risks.
Steer told me global pandemics weren't really on his mind early on.
Certainly not when we started the company. I mean, you know, I guess we all have this recency bias and we think about the things that, you know, that impact us, that have impacted us recently. And because, you know, it had been such a long time, certainly in our part of the world and in your part of the world too, where, you know, a major pandemic like this had become such a big influence on how we do things day to day. It wasn't, you know, I can't say it was at the forefront of our thinking.
As COVID-19 arrived in New Zealand in late February, Mike saw an opportunity to apply SaferMe's model of data-driven risk analysis to contact tracing systems specifically designed for businesses.
What we did see, what we call clusters as they occurred, was that a number of them occurred in workplaces. I think it was about half of our major clusters actually came from or around workplaces. So what that means is that as we start heading back to work and businesses start reopening as they need to, you know, fairly soon when it's safe to do so, is that they're obviously a risk again for creating those really fast accelerated clusters of cases. We're very much an organization to organization basis. So what we want to do is really help them to not spreading the virus, but also to help maintain their operations, right?
I asked Mike to explain how his company is using tech to contact trace employees, starting with their arrival in the workplace.
One thing we're doing is the daily well-being check-in. So just a prompted way to connect with the employees that they can confirm each morning, takes them 2 seconds, that, you know, I'm actually well today, or maybe I'm starting to get some symptoms. And if the business is able to react and say, hey, well, maybe it's better you work from home today, or maybe, you know, we isolate if it's really suspected could be COVID, that's a huge advantage than another option where you're waiting for a positive test result, because that lag could be at least several days. And in that time, that person's at work, spreading the virus, and the impact on the overall operations could be much more significant.
Employees are just part of the equation. From vendors to customers, people are walking in and out of most businesses all day. To truly analyze the safety of the employee, you have to trace everyone they come in contact with.
We call it a safety bubble that the employees have.
Mike explained to me that one of the greatest benefits of the technology and app like SaferMe provides is that it is scalable to the size of a particular company. The bigger the business, the more employees and customers they have, making the task of contact tracing all of them even more complicated.
They're basically being required to provide a list of the people that have been on site and sort of the time. And if you're a small business, that's kind of manageable with pen and paper, provided you don't have too many people coming in each day. But it gets to a point where it's not scalable. So we can provide different options for taking in the public's data, you know, if it's coming through. But otherwise, we can provide just that easy way to enter manual details. A big part of it is really making sure that that data is really easy to then respond with. So, you know, notes and paper sheets over the course of a few weeks becomes pretty unwieldy. And then in addition to that, we have the manual contact tracing, right? So everyone they're in contact with during their day, might be a supplier, could be people bringing deliveries, they're not going to have the app necessarily. So they can manually add those details into the app as well. And all of that collates into the contacts table. So each worker basically has their own individualized contact table. And that makes it really quite fast for the organization to then respond when there is a positive or a suspected COVID case.
Countries like Taiwan that use tech to contact trace public coronavirus exposure, and companies like SaferMe that build tech infrastructure to make it work for businesses, have both successfully navigated a big concern that could slow similar success stories in the United States. Personal privacy. Back here in Oregon, I asked Tricia Mortel about the use of tech to aid contact tracing efforts in Washington County.
We're not using that here in Washington County or Oregon at this point. People do feel that's pretty invasive and like tracking your Google tracker on your phone, where have I been? We really think at this point the best approach is a human approach.
This podcast started with a phone call in the future.
Hello?
Health alert. An individual you came in contact with at Mike's Pancake.
And the premise of using tech to trace potential coronavirus exposure, an idea that doesn't sit well with some lawmakers.
What I am concerned about are the idea that we're going to track Americans through their cell phone contacts. To me, that's unacceptable invasion of privacy. It's a scary, futuristic society where everyone is monitored every moment, either by private business or by the government.
Oregon Democrat and U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley has been at the forefront of privacy and tech for a long time. He has pushed for user protections and repeatedly called for increased transparency from corporations as to the data they are collecting and how they are using it.
It's really about the loss of privacy in America in a way that I've been expressing concern about for years, about the too widespread use of facial recognition or cell phone tracking.
While fully understanding the importance of contact tracing in battling the coronavirus pandemic, when he talked to Coin6 News in early May, Merkley expressed grave concern over the unchecked use of tech to do it.
Just the fact that the tech companies are saying, hey, we've got this great solution. We'll take all this data we collected on how people move around the country and disclose people's private journeys bothers me a lot.
Any system of aggressive contact tracing and asking for personal information from customers concerns some business advocates that I talked to.
Just wearing a face mask out in public now, whether or not you choose to do so because it's not required, can be the cause for some angry words between people, altercations.
Greg Astley is the Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association.
So to go a step further and ask for personal information from somebody, it just opens up the opportunity for customers who may be frustrated, who may be anxious, to have a confrontation with an employee, which we want to try to avoid as much as possible, obviously.
An original proposal from the state of Oregon to allow hotels and restaurants to reopen had contained a requirement for businesses to contact trace customers.
So the contact tracing requirement is a little bit complicated. Obviously, in the first place, you've got confrontations potentially between customers and employees. I think we've seen as the country has opened up in places like Stillwater, Oklahoma, you've had physical altercations between customers and employees just for having to wear a mask into an establishment.
The Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association fought hard against that, and the provisions have been removed for now. Toward the end of our conversation, Astley brought it back to concerns echoed by a lot of privacy advocates.
And then we start getting into the issues of privacy. That information is going to have to be kept. Is that restaurant or that lodging property going to be held liable if someone's information gets out there and there's a case of identity theft, say, for example? So it's fraught with a lot of possibilities, a lot of complications, and some dangerous situations there.
I asked everyone I interviewed for this story to comment on how personal privacy is managed and protected in different systems of contact tracing, starting with Tricia Mortel and the boots-on-the-ground, human approach in Washington County.
As a public-facing group, what kind of message do you want people to hear about protecting privacy?
Public health has always protected personal privacy. We have rules and regulations around that. And we share only the briefest of information that we need to make sure that we can share with someone, you have been exposed. We keep it very private. We don't share information about names unless we need to. And we gather information and keep it in a secure database. We don't share information with other government agencies. I know some in our community would be worried if this information were to be shared with immigration. We do not share that with immigration. All of our information is kept very confidential.
Mike Steer told me that his company, Safer Me, and others like it that operate in New Zealand, Australia, and Europe must act in accordance with more stringent privacy protection laws than are applied nationally here in the United States. Regulations that he says make the idea of tracking an individual far-fetched.
The main question we often get from employers is that we're going to have concern from our employees that we can see where they're moving and what they're doing. And that's just not the case. We don't provide that data to the employer at all. So we sort of act as what we call a trusted intermediary. The location data that is tracked, that's stored on secure servers on our side. And the controller, which is the work organization, the employer, they only get access to that individualized contact table of the people when they need to know it. So it's not like they can see what Joe's doing as he's moving around on his lunch break or during the day. You know, it's just really secure in that sense that the privacy of the employee is protected.
Some 5,700 miles northwest of New Zealand, things are different in Taiwan. As Oregon State University professor Chen-Hui Chi explained, painful memories of pandemics in the recent past provided justification for people to forgo some levels of privacy.
In Taiwan, there's also privacy concern mm-hmm. as well, but people are more willing to collaborate. Many people in Taiwan still have a very clear memory from 2003 SARS, and they knew how bad and how Taiwan was totally unprepared for that 2003 SARS. And with that vivid memory, that makes Taiwan more alert and more willing to collaborate.
It is community collaboration without tracking cell phone signals that Senator Merkley sees as a solution.
Let's do it by talking to the people who test positive and then talking to the folks they've been meeting with. That is the way it's been done for other pandemics. You go to a person who's infected, you find out who they've been in contact with, you knock on the door of those folks and say, you may be at risk. Would you like to be tested? We'd like to have you tested. Most people want to be tested in that situation for their own health and for the health of others around them. And if you trace that back at least two links from each person, then you really start to understand how the disease is moving, which can guide public policy as well as helping those that you're directly in contact with from further spreading the disease.
Throughout the course of researching, interviewing, and writing for this podcast, one message came through loud and clear. Well-designed and well-executed contact tracing is necessary to slow the spread of the coronavirus. But is it necessary to reopen the economy?
And absolutely, yes.
We know large numbers of people have lost their jobs, and we want them to have employment. We want them to have the resources to be healthy. So we're going to need to find this balance going forward.
By the second week of June, businesses were, slowly, reopening in Oregon and across the country. As an expert in the field of public health, Tricia Mortel told me that continued progress in economic recovery requires the continued expansion of contact tracing.
We need to find the right balance between stopping the spread of the disease and having people have the economic security that they need. It's been a challenge for every one of us.
In New Zealand, the second week of June brought news that the country was virtually coronavirus-free and lifting almost all restrictions, something Mike Steer told me would require successful contact tracing to accomplish.
Do you think high-level contact tracing is a necessity to reopen an economy?
I think it's going to be a huge help. I mean, if we start with businesses, for them to be able to provide that assurance to partners, to suppliers, to customers that they are safe to trade with, so I think it's a very thorough approach to ensuring they mitigate the risk that COVID could have on their operations moving forward. So yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a fundamental part. But don't get me wrong, it's not the only thing. Personal protective equipment, which is going to be key, the social distancing, so many measures that need to be in place just to help make those environments safer.
As Dr. Emily Gurley from Johns Hopkins explained, effective contact tracing is vitally important to restarting economies.
I think this is the best chance we have. I really think that if we can build up our ability to find and trace contacts and let people know, if we can do that quickly, then we have a chance at being able to open up some parts of our economy. It's going to be a different normal than what we're used to.
And if heavily coordinated contact tracing is key to reopening an economy after a pandemic, I wanted to know if Dr. Chi thought it was an effort that can only be carried out by the government, as it has been in Taiwan.
Do you think high-level public-facing contact tracing is a necessity to reopen an economy?
And absolutely, yes.
Does government need to get involved in creating infrastructure for this to happen?
My opinion is government need to collaborate with those carriers because they have the data. As long as there is a check and balance on how government uses that data, which Taiwan does, will we be equally willing to give up that information to government, particularly for the purpose of pandemic control?
The life that we were used to is gone. Things are going to be different going forward. The future of contact tracing doesn't need to be dystopian. For nearly 200 years, it has successfully helped slow the spread of infectious disease. Modern tech tools, with appropriate oversight, can help control the coronavirus and future pandemics to come, while protecting individual privacy. We just have to ask ourselves, if it is worth it.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.